Hello, and welcome back to the Institutional Beat podcast, where we discuss interesting and relevant topics for institutional investors. My name is Dylan Ray, and I'm a portfolio manager on the PHNN institutional team, and I'll be your host on today's episode. Today, we are going to dive into the topic of emerging market equities, which to the surprise of many investors have been a standout performer this year, with the broad-based Emerging Markets Equities Index besting both the U.S. and global developed market equity indices by a wide margin. As our listeners will know, RBC GAM has multiple investment teams around the world managing a full spectrum of asset classes, including emerging market equities. And within our firm, there is no one better placed to discuss what's happening in emerging markets than my colleague and friend, Deanna Jelic. Deanna is a member of RBC GAM UK's Emerging Markets Equity Team, and she is joining us today from London, England. Deanna, thank you so much for making time for us today, and welcome to the Institutional Beat.
Hi, great to be here, Dylan.
Great. So I started the episode by focusing on performance, so let's dive into that first. Could you walk us through how emerging market equities have performed so far this year and shed some light on the key factors that are driving this performance?
Yeah, sure. So as you mentioned, Dylan, you know, what we've seen this year has been quite notable. There's been a significant reversal in equity market leadership away from the US and into non-US assets, particularly emerging markets. So if we look at the performance for the first half of this year, EM equities have actually outperformed the S&P by almost 10% in US dollar terms. And, you know, when we look at what the trigger of this has been, I think the main trigger has really been the fact that we've seen elevated trade and economic policy uncertainty coming from the US. And that's really coincided by significant US dollar weakness. So after about 13 years of, you know, very strong US dollar bull market, we've actually seen the US dollar have its worst performance for the first half of the year in over 50 years. So it's fallen by about 10% as of June. And I think what's really telling when you look at that US dollar performance is that it failed to rally on a risk off move, which actually was the announcement of those Liberation Day tariffs back in April. And that's the first time that it's, you know, failed to do so since 1987 with the Wall Street stock market crash. So yeah, some really significant developments so far this year. Now, if we just dive deeper into EM equity performance, so I think one positive is that performance is really broadening out. So the asset class has performed very strongly as a whole, but it's really been driven by many different markets, many different drivers. So you have the tech-driven markets of Korea and Taiwan, once again taking the lead in Q2. Also, positive political developments have been drivers behind a number of markets. So South Korea, where we've seen the removal of political gridlock, but also Brazil and the Latin America region in general. In terms of sectors, so IT, as we've seen globally, has once again been the outperformer over the last quarter. And also financials, it's an area that we really like. It's had a couple of years where its performance has been quite challenged. But this year, once again, we've started to see really strong performance from financials. And we think the outlook looks really strong from here.
Great. So you mentioned the dreaded T word, or tariffs. Many of the Trump administration's most notable targets, of course, have been EM countries. And I'm thinking China, Mexico, India, and South Africa in particular. Can you share your current assessment of the impact of tariffs on emerging markets and maybe highlight where your assessment perhaps differs from the market's current expectations for the impact of tariffs and deglobalization more broadly?
Yeah, sure. So clearly the picture is still very uncertain. We don't really know exactly where, you know, the tariff rates will end up for each market. But I think, you know, when we look at, you know, what's been happening over the last few months since Liberation Day, I think our main concern from an EM equity standpoint was China. We felt that there was a risk that that Trump would move from really targeting all countries to looking to isolate China. But actually now we feel that it's looking increasingly likely that a deal between the US and China will be struck, as China's really shown its strength, I'd say. And I think the US perhaps underestimated its reliance on China, both in terms of, you know, things like rare earths, but also other exports. And also the fact that actually when you look at what's been happening with China tech and innovation, for example, with DeepSeek, I think the US is starting to question whether, you know, clamping down on, you know, China's access to some of the higher end chips was actually, you know, a positive move, or whether it actually, you know, really backfired and caused China to innovate and progress even faster. So, yeah, those are just some initial remarks. But I'd say generally, if we take a step back and look at the exposure of emerging markets to the US, actually, we feel quite comforted to see that actually for most EM economies, the exposure is quite low. So if you look at it, for example, you know, the US as a portion of total exports or as a portion of total GDP, it's kind of in the low single digits or even, low double digits or even single digits for most economies. I think Mexico would be the one exception where it's really reliant on US exports. So over 80% of its exports go to the US. But actually, overall, we actually feel that Mexico is in quite a strong position currently. We feel Sheinbaum, the president, has been able to negotiate and navigate Trump quite well. And we generally feel that LATAM as a region could come out fairly strong relative to other markets in this environment. And I think the longer term picture, which is probably the most important, is a decoupling of EM trade. So we're increasingly starting to see that emerging markets are trading more and more with one another. And as of today, almost 50% of all EM exports actually go to other EM economies. And considering that's really where the growth is in terms of consumption, in terms of the economy, we actually think that that's really beneficial for the region as a whole.
So that's an excellent setup for where I want to go to next, which is looking at the outlook for emerging markets. As noted earlier, emerging markets have been surging this year, significantly outpacing their developed market counterparts. Many investors, and ourselves included here, have been optimistic that emerging markets will regain their leadership over developed markets over a sustained period of time, just given the strong underlying fundamentals that underpin EM. Can you take us through this thesis at a high level and update us on your team's current outlook for emerging market equities?
Yeah, I think, as you mentioned, Dylan, we've been, you know, talking about this for a long time and observing the fact that actually fundamentals have been turning in EM's favor for a number of years. But actually what we're starting to see now, and more investors are really asking the question is, you know, are we actually now at a turning point? You know, is Trump really the trigger to see this regime change? So if we take a step back and we look at equity market performance, what we can see is the relative performance of EM and DM equities moves in very long cycles. So going back to kind of 1990, so, you know, 35 years, we've seen really two long cycles where EM has outperformed, and then two long periods where EM has underperformed, including the last kind of 12, 13, 14 years. And when we look at the factors that have been driving these relative cycles, there's a couple that really stand out. I'd say, first of all, the US dollar. There's a strong negative correlation between the US dollar and the relative performance of EM equities. And then also relative GDP growth and relative earnings. And all of those are now turning in EM's favor. So the US dollar has really been, I guess, the final domino to fall. So increasingly, investors are really asking the same question. And we really feel, you know, the question on whether US dollar weakness is now structural, we think there's a strong case to argue that that is the case. For example, if you first think about Trump himself, his policy actually, you know, wants a weaker US dollar. Secondly, we have very large twin deficits in the US, large current account, fiscal deficits. And ultimately, you know, we think after a very strong dollar bull market, valuations, despite the recent weakness, actually look extremely stretched for the US dollar. So there is actually, you know, still some way to go, particularly considering investors' overexposure to the US dollar and US assets. I'd say, you know, in terms of the other factors I mentioned, so GDP growth. So one of the reasons why, you know, people invest in emerging markets is for stronger growth. And indeed, EM accounts for about 2/3 of global GDP growth. But it's really been that differential between EM and DM GDP growth that has really determined that relative equity performance. So what we've seen is over the last decade, that differential has narrowed. But again, that's really widening in emerging markets' favor, and it's really expanding. So it's no longer just, you know, China story. We have India, we have Southeast Asia, we have the Middle East, many different drivers and many different factors really contributing to that strong GDP growth. And finally, earnings. So earnings have been cyclically weak in emerging markets for a number of years. But again, we're really starting to see a pickup, again, really supporting the case that we are now the beginning of a turning point which should favor emerging market equities.
So you covered quite a lot there in terms of countries and markets and different sectors. That actually brings me perfectly to the next question, which is just to take a moment to think about what's on your team's agenda. A very vast scope, perhaps of all the investment teams we talk to, yours has probably the widest scope in terms of what you cover. So 24 countries representing more than half the world's population. Certainly more than half in terms of the economic growth and contribution to GDP, and well over 1,400 potential companies to invest in. So it's always fascinating to hear what's on your and on the team's agenda for terms of research and travel plans. Any notable trips or research updates you think would be interesting to our listeners, to sort of where you're focused on at the moment?
Yeah, so I mean, as you know, Dylan, our team is very centralized. We all sit together in very close proximity in London, which is really a hub for EM investing. So if you looked at our calendar, I mean, there's not many days where an EM corporate isn't traveling through. But you're right. So traveling to the regions is really important. We do a lot of on the ground research. In terms of what we've been doing this year, I can highlight maybe at the beginning of this year and the end of last year, we did a couple of trips in Latin America. So we visited Chile, Argentina, Mexico, and I think it's a really interesting region. It's one where we found that politics can make a material difference in terms of, you know, how we invest and the share price performance. And what we've seen is these quite aggressive shifts in terms of politics, where we've had phases of left-wing governments and then phases when it's been more market-friendly, more centrist governments. And I'd say, you know, over the last couple of years, it's been quite a challenged environment. It's very much been focused more on left-wing policies, more populist leaders. But that's really now changing. There's a lot of elections coming up. So Chile this year, Colombia, Peru, next year it's Brazil. And the expectation is that we'll once again shift more to the kind of centrist side of politics. And that should be really beneficial for those markets. And we've actually started to look for opportunities to add to our exposure. The markets themselves have started to do a lot better as a result. And then maybe just to mention, you know, Taiwan, Korea, we visited both markets in March, very much tech-driven markets. So Taiwan in particular. I think one of the interesting things about Taiwan is if you look at the profitability of MSCI Taiwan, it's really very steadily increased through the years. And really a big part of that is tech. I mean, the majority of the Taiwanese market cap is tech driven. And these are corporates that have really moved up the value add chain, really strong focus in R&D innovation. And they're really strong players in terms of AI, but really trading at a fraction of the valuation of the US companies. So it's a market that we really like. But we did start to take some profits as in EM. It did start to do very well. And we have some concerns about the amount of CapEx going into AI, particularly from the US hyperscalers.
Great, thank you. Very, very interesting as always to hear what's on your wide agenda. I want to end here just on what we're hearing from our investors on the topic of emerging market equities. One of the questions we've been getting recently is whether investors can capture the growth in emerging markets through their global equity managers, many of whom hold a small allocation to some particularly global EM companies, or whether they should continue to maintain a standalone emerging market equity allocation. What are your thoughts on this? And maybe if I asked it a different way, what would you potentially lose, or what are investors potentially giving up by relying on their developed market managers to have some exposure to emerging markets?
Yeah, I think it's a really, really interesting question. And actually, anecdotally, Dylan, I've been with the team now for almost 8 years. And what's interesting is it's definitely been the busiest start to the year in terms of marketing activity. So we've had really strong inflows this year. And I think what's particularly notable is that it's no longer just about replacement opportunities, but we're starting to see investors move into the asset class for the first time or look to top up their exposure. Which I think is really quite telling and quite interesting. I think the other point to make is, you know, anecdotally, when I look at, you know, some DM managers, what we're seeing is actually that the majority of their exposure is to global EM companies. But actually, we would argue the opportunity is very much on the companies that are focused on domestic emerging markets. So, you know, to put that in context in terms of the opportunity, EM represents over 85% of the global population, and as I mentioned, accounts for the majority of global GDP growth. So being exposed to those domestic structural plays is really what we want to secure within the asset class. And we think, there is currently a bit of an anomaly in markets where, despite that huge representation of EM in terms of the population and in terms of GDP growth, EM only accounts for about 10% of the MSCI all country world. So that doesn't make sense to us. And in terms of, that domestic exposure, I think what's also interesting, if you look at the overall emerging market asset class, it's really transformed over the last decades. So it's no longer, I think, what some investors still have in their mind in terms of being a commodity play. Countries such as Russia, which is no longer in the index, but also LATAM are only very small portions now for the asset class. It's very much more of an Asia story. And in terms of sectors, we've really moved away from commodity sectors. So energy and materials only accounts for about 10% of the benchmark. And it's very much more your structural growth sectors. So your consumer areas, financials and tech that really drive the exposure of emerging market equities. So we really think that it makes sense to, in order to really gain that true exposure to that structural growth opportunity, it really makes sense to be more domestically positioned in those types of companies.
Yeah, those are some excellent points certainly to consider. We've amazingly reached the end of our time, so we'll wrap it up here. Deanna, thank you. It was an absolute pleasure. We really appreciate you sharing your insights and perspectives with us, and of course appreciate your time late in the day, your time out there. I also want to thank our listeners, of course, for taking time to join us today. We hope you can join us again on the next episode coming out in a few weeks. Thanks and take care. This content is provided for general information only and does not constitute financial, tax, legal, or accounting advice and should not be relied upon in that regard. Neither PHNN Institutional nor any of its affiliates accepts any liability for loss or damage arising from the use of the information contained in this podcast. Securities mentioned are for information purposes only and do not constitute investment advice, a recommendation, or an offer of solicitation.